my practice seldom evolves from me throwing a marker at a piece of paper and seeing what comes out.
That was printmaker Tate Foley talking about the process that he uses in his work. He's very methodical, but we'll get back to that in a minute. I'm Nancy Fowler.
And I'm Willis Ryder Arnold, and this is Cut and Paste. So we spoke with Tate Foley because he's one of the Great Rivers Biennial winners, and we figured that we would catch up with them during this year that they're working on their projects. But before we actually get to our conversation, Nancy, you actually met him in his home, right?
I did. It was the Contemporary Art Museum's Open Studios tour. He was on the tour last October, and he led us, our little bus full of people, down to his basement studio. It was very neat and organized, and he had another separate area for his two children, I guess a toddler and a baby, where they hung their work as well. So it was very informative and also cute at the same time.
That's so adorable.
And his wife actually sews and makes her art that way. So it's an actively artistic family.
Huh. It's funny that his whole family is involved in all these different arts because he himself almost wasn't a printmaker. He almost went into ceramics.
I remember in undergrad, in the first school I went to in undergrad, I was really into ceramics. I'd taken a lot of ceramics courses. I remember I'd only taken probably one printmaking course, and I showed my portfolio to a few of my professors that I really respected in ceramics, and I showed them my ceramics work and a few prints that I had made, and I said I'm thinking about going to grad school for ceramics, and they said you should go to grad school for printmaking. and so I liked my ceramic work, but maybe they didn't see as much merit in it as the prints. So I kind of changed directions in undergrad, started focusing on printmaking.
What is it about printmaking that you like now and that really draws you in?
My practice seldom evolves from me throwing a marker at a piece of paper and seeing what comes out. But I think I like printmaking that it's about planning. I can wrap my mind kind of around the steps that you have to take. For, you know, creating a lithograph, for instance, there's this numerous steps that you have to go through, all in a very strict order. If you mess up the order or forget one of those steps, the print doesn't turn out. And, you know, for some artists, for some students, that can be a very scary thing. But for me, I've always really attached to it and understood that I was going to get a pretty specific result from a specific set of processes.
It seems like you have a kind of mental process or mental focus as well. You know, a lot of your work deals with issues of consumerism, and I'm curious what brought you into that kind of mental structure.
I think that prints are there for people to consume. A print and a product are so closely related sometimes. That idea, I think, has always been there in the work. If I'm working with baseball cards, a commodity that was created simply for buying and selling and trading, or I'm thinking about much larger economic products.
You kind of grinned when you mentioned baseball cards. Do you have like a personal connection to those?
I just grew up collecting baseball cards and Marvel trading cards, comic trading cards, all under the thought that eventually someday they would be worth something, you know. It was like for a young boy, it was the idea that I was building my future in a very real way through collecting something that I really liked. And fast forward to now, and my baseball card collection is worth probably the piece of gum that I'm chewing. So, yeah, the show that I had at Sheldon this past summer dealt with trading cards, not actually baseball cards, but trading cards. I think my favorite set is probably my Growing Pains trading cards, which are very funny. It has a picture of, you know, Jason Seaver playing the guitar and a sticker on one. And I try to think about who would be the person that would buy Growing Pains trading cards. Why were they sold? But I think they're made so cheaply and so easily that even if they sold them for a dollar a pack, probably closer to a quarter a pack, that there was still something happening there with buying and trading and selling. And of course, the things are worthless now.
I wanted to ask you to describe visually a piece of work, what was already there, maybe in an original product or what you created.
The work was essentially buying, I bought about 150 packs of trading cards from one from every different movie or TV show. I bought all these cards and I really attracted to the form and the color of the packages that they were packaged in, these wax packages. And I was also attracted to the secondary advertising that was happening on the packages themselves. So you'd buy this pack of trading cards, understanding that the exchange of buying and selling has already happened and what else is left. But then you'd flip over the pack of trading cards and there'd be a further advertisement for buying another product, whether it was a toy or an item to hold your trading cards or baseball gum or anything like that. A lot of the work that I've been thinking about in the last year anyways has been Reagan-era desensitization to advertising and also the deregulation of advertising to children. It really started in the early 80s. And so baseball cards kind of swooped in and saw, wow, somebody could buy something for a quarter, but really they're buying an advertisement. They're kind of helping us out in the long run. And so I made prints that were much larger. They expanded the trading cards probably by about 400%. They were the backsides of these wax packages.
Do you remember when that kind of like idea came to you, or when you were staring like at a pack of cards and were sitting there being like, wait, this is screwy?
Yeah. I had bought these cards understanding that I was going to comb through all of the cards themselves and try to pull some imagery from the cards, whether it was the borders around the cards, whether it was the imagery in the cards themselves or the text or language of the cards. And then as all these packages started coming in from eBay, I was flipping them over, rolling them around a lot, and I realized all the advertisements on the back. And I was like, oh, that's really interesting. I bought this thing and it's trying to advertise the secondary thing to me. People didn't need to see what the product was, whether it was Jaws or Jaws 2 or Back to the Future trading cards or something like that, that I could just flip that over and not show them necessarily what the original product was.
You've been recently chosen as one of the Great Rivers Biennial artists. And I just wondered if you could talk about what your plans for that project might be.
This new work is about language in its most basic forms. I've been collecting language from anywhere I hear it, really. These are just words that I'm hearing and I'm writing down and kind of forming a collection like I would baseball cards. I'm writing them down, carefully thinking about how they could be misspelled or respelled, thinking about how they could be phonetically spelled to understand the root of the word more. I wanted to print these words as singular posters, so the same word just one word on a poster. But the word repeated over and over, and the posters hung in grids, like you would see bills posted on a wall for any kind of advertisement or concert or anything like that. And the words are spelled phonologically, which is actually dealing with the sound and the gesture produced when you pronounce the word, rather than looking at how the word is spelled or written. These bills are going to be posted in a grid onto wooden panels that have been constructed. The panels are quite large. They resemble objects that are used in demonstration or protest, but without the action of humans being there to interact with them. Really, the interaction comes from just seeing this thing that looks like it had a utility, but that use has kind of been taken away or paused for the moment. And I think it's been really interesting to carefully listen over the last year and really try to understand how and why words are used.
Do you have any favorite words?
One of the words I really like is foment, to start or to incite or to begin something that might lead to disaster. And so if that one will be on a poster, every poster I'm going to kind of mark out new words in foment. But the two words I really attracted to were foe, F-O-E, and then faux, F-A-U-X. Those could both kind of be found in the construction of the letters within foment, and I really like those kind of ideas. So it is like this first idea of collecting the word. It's then understanding the root of how it's gestured and sounded out to write on the poster. And then it'll be me coming back on top of the posters with a pen in let's say highlighting certain words found within foment to kind of build what the word could be or how the word could be used in a conversation.
Is this kind of work or your work in general commercially successful, or does that even matter?
I felt like because I've been a lifelong academic, the commercial aspect of it has never mattered. That being said, it's weird to talk about how commercially driven my work is,
right.
But not really. I don't think of it as commercial. there are aspects of that that always work their way in. I'm a printmaker, so I'm very into publishing and publications, making things that are to be sold specifically. And I always really, really engage with that. I think it's things like this show at the Contemporary Art Museum that I don't initially think commercial. I think I'm ready to engage with the public with some interesting ideas, and I hope to just get them thinking about the same things or similar things that I'm thinking about, and I'm happy if it stops right there.
Have you had any feedback from your work that it does indeed get these conversations started and people are thinking what you're thinking?
I usually, you know, have this conversation about what the work is hoping to be with people, and they're always incredibly eager to give me words to use. Like, oh, did you think about this word? Did you think about this word?
Oh,
that kind
yeah.
of thing, which I always think is really great.
What are some words that people have said?
Alarmist is one. Nationhood. And so if we're thinking about like feedback that way, I think that that always excites me to think that I can tell somebody about a project that I'm working on and they can immediately start giving me some ideas about it. That's usually, in my opinion, a good gauge for is somebody really engaging with this work or not.
That was printmaker Tate Foley. He's also a professor at Webster University, and he was just discussing his process and how he came to be a printmaker.
This has been Cut and Paste, produced by Willis Ryder Arnold
and Nancy Fowler.
And the music you heard throughout is by local musician Eric Hall.
Cut and Paste is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. You can find us online at stlpublicradio.org or wherever you get your podcasts.